So we're aware of eight planets that orbit our own star, the Sun. So if you think about a planet orbiting another star, a pretty simple concept to think of, we call that an exoplanet if it's a different star.
Those planets are being studied because?
Well, it's fascinating. They're fascinating in their own right because you have one example of a planetary system when you study this our own solar system. So our Sun is a sort of garden variety star. It's a sort of a mid-sized star. It's a middle-aged star. And it has one set of eight planets, and we live on one of them. But it's, I think, a pretty interesting question in its own right to just ask, are there planets around other stars? And there was every reason to believe that there would be, but until about 12 years ago, we had no evidence of that. And now we're aware of hundreds of planets around hundreds of other stars.
We also want to study these, don't we, because it's possible that they have life.
You know, this is one of the big questions that mankind has wondered for centuries, is are we the sole example of life or sentient life, even more so, in the universe? And one of the first steps in trying to answer that sort of long-standing question of our place in the universe is looking for other planets, other places in the universe that would be suitable to sustain life, the types of planets that might have, say, liquid water on their surface or an atmosphere or both. The things that we see as being important for hosting life on Earth or in the solar system, we can look for those conditions around other stars as well.
And this is any kind of life, right? We're not necessarily talking about intelligent life, but life, period.
Sure. It's putting the cart ahead of the horse a little bit to try and identify what types of life might be on these other planets. That's still in the realm of speculation at this point. But where our science and astrophysics has reached at this point is being able to identify what the surfaces would be. Where would you put the life? And so we try to identify those exoplanets that are at the right distances from their star to have conditions suitable for what we would expect life to require.
The money that UM just received, the NASA grant, is part of what's called Project Minerva. And this is, I understand, four institutions, including UM, are part of this project. And that project is to look for these planets and look for these signs of life.
Absolutely. So Project Minerva is a collaboration among four universities, the University of Montana, Harvard University, Penn State University, and Caltech. And these institutions have come together to build Minerva, an array of telescopes where we'll use four small telescopes, connect them to one set of instrumentation, and dedicate that observatory full-time to looking for Earth-like planets around nearby stars.
How did UM get with three very prestigious institutions to be part of this?
Yeah, you know, this. People ask me oftentimes about this as Minerva's gotten going in the last year or so. Why UM? How did we get involved? And the fact of the matter is the internet age has made astronomy a sort of multi-institution global affair. Really, the science has gone where the scientists are. So, you know, we have the ability to work remotely. We control our telescopes remotely over the internet. We, on the team, work through video conferences, telephone calls, email. So it's not really important where the scientists are. So the science goes where the scientists are. And I happen to be here teaching at the University of Montana, which I really love. And, you know, my collaboration with my colleagues on the Minerva team just happens to have us where we are.
I was reading about the kind of telescopes that are being used for this research. And one fact I read was that space-based telescopes are actually better than ground-based.
Yes, it depends on what you're trying to do. So we have telescopes at various different locations around the Earth. I mean, there are telescopes that are in polar locations, there are telescopes on mountaintops, and there are telescopes in orbit. And each one of those different locations where you put a telescope has different advantages and disadvantages. Space has the advantage that you can not have to worry about the atmosphere muddling up your view. You don't have to worry about interference from radio stations, no offense, or cellular telephones and things like this. But space is also extremely expensive. It's very hard to get there. It's very expensive to do the rocket launches. It's almost impossible to repair and maintain a telescope. Hubble was the great exception of any telescope that's ever been put up and then repaired or modified. Instruments go obsolete, and it's very hard to replace them if you're 1.5 million miles from the Earth, like the Kepler satellite is. So there are some advantages to being in space, but there's some major disadvantages. And so we can build larger telescopes that we can maintain, that we can keep current instrumentation on, that you can drive up to here on the surface of the Earth, that have big advantages. And if the atmosphere is not a major if the motion of the Earth's atmosphere is not a major impediment to your science, then there's no reason not to do it from the ground. And that's where we are in this project with Minerva. We're looking at nearby stars, so they tend to be relatively bright. And we don't really have to worry about atmospheric distortions and things because the stars are so bright.
Besides the curiosity factor, why should we care?
I mean, to me, as an astrophysicist, the question is sort of self-evident. I mean, don't we want to know? If your listeners have ever seen the movie Contact,
Jodie Foster.
With Jodie Foster. Carl Sagan wrote it. You know, one of the things for me watching that film 10, 12 years ago when it came out, your first instinct as an astrophysicist is to see, did they get the science right?
Did they?
They did, by the way. Carl Sagan wrote the book, so it had pretty good odds. So the science was pretty well done in that movie, but the point at which they fictionally came in contact with another another civilization, other life forms, communicating with them across the vast reaches of space. One thing I hadn't anticipated and thought was fascinating about the movie is the cultural effects that would have, the way people reacted and the scenes that they had in the movie, fictionalized as it was, of people camping out in the desert wanting to know. And I think there's a very human appeal to wanting to know what our place in the universe is. Where did we come from? Are we alone? Are we the only life forms out there? Is this lucky? And for some people, there's a major theological aspects to this question. I think for anyone, there's philosophical questions that come up with this. But just anybody can walk out and look up at the night sky and you see thousands of bright points of light just with your eye out in your backyard in Missoula. And looking up and thinking, is there anyone looking back?
Are we prepared? If there is, you bring up the cultural impact and Contact, that movie, raised that too, because that would be a radical change in our outlook of our place in the universe. And it seems to me the ramifications of that are many.
Yeah. I mean, that's really, I think, more a question for a sociologist or a political scientist. So I'll hide behind my PhD a little bit on that one. But from a scientific standpoint, we're reaching the point where we can start identifying where those planets might be. There are many things to say, are we alone, to answer that question and to find another civilization and make first contact or something like that, like you saw in the movie Contact or other movies in the science fiction genre. But there's a lot of steps along the way. And this isn't the first step that we're doing with Minerva, but it's one of the early steps. When I was an undergrad 15 years ago, we didn't know for sure that there were other Earth-like planets around. And now, based on scientific data from measurements, we know that these planets are in abundance, that our galaxy probably has more small rocky planets than it has stars. And there's 200 billion stars in our galaxy. So this is a young but rapidly growing science. And to jump to the question of, are we prepared as a society? Well, I don't think there's a lot of worry that we're going to find another civilization asking us over for dinner in the next 10 years. But what we can find is the places where we should look very carefully to see if we do find life. And it's worth mentioning also that, the Earth has only had the ability to communicate. Deer and porcupines can't contact other civilizations at this point on other planets. Humans have the ability to do that now, but we've only had that ability for 100 years. And so out of the several million year history of life on Earth, things walking around out of the ocean, 100 years is a very, very small fraction of that time.
What are the odds, do you think?
What are the odds? That's an interesting question. If you want to talk about speculation, then you can start dealing with really large numbers in astronomy. As I mentioned, there's 200 billion stars or so in our galaxy alone, let alone the 100 billion other galaxies. But if we stick to our galaxy, 200 billion stars, we know factually from measurements now that there are more planets than stars. On average, each star has more than one planet. So you've got a couple hundred, 300 billion maybe planets to work with, and some of those are going to be rocky. In fact, more of them are rocky than big gassy things like Jupiter. And some of those are going to be close enough to their star to have liquid water. So you start narrowing it down and multiplying those numbers down, and you still get millions of places where life could exist.
So odds are good, I'd say.
The odds are good that there's life out there, I would say, whether or not they're trying to make contact with us or have that technological ability at the moment. open question.
One final question. Where is this telescope going to be built?
Here? Oh, I get asked this a lot right now. So Project Minerva right now, we're evaluating four sites that are competing for our location. I can tell you they're all in the Northern Hemisphere. They're all mountaintops. They're all high, dry, dark, the things that we want, calm air, the things that are really useful for our scientific observations. Beyond that, we will probably be making our final decision here by September. And we anticipate UM's telescope being moved to whichever location we choose sometime next summer.
I have been speaking with Nate McCready, who is an associate professor of astrophysics at the University of Montana, and he is one of the principal investigators in Project Minerva, which is a project to explore the existence of exoplanets and what those exoplanets might play host to. And then we certainly look forward to the outcome of this research, Dr. McCready. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Sally.